The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that would not be surprised at what can get accomplished in 13 seconds. It's time to do a little end-of-year stargazing. Mark, happy Christmas, happy holidays, pending happy new year.
Well, it should be a happy new year. We got two games with Chicago coming up.
I mean, it's got to be, right? You would have said the same thing about a game against St. Louis.
Yeah, although you'd think they would have scheduled it at a different weekend, because there's nothing like that that full complement of red in the sea of green. So it's kind of a Christmassy thing, not a New Year's thing.
The old Chicago air quote home game. So it'll be a first look at Bedard. So agenda wise, we'll talk. We've got a couple of games to talk about, and then in Nashville and St. Louis sigh. Then we've got the back to backer against Chicago. We'll do some New Year's resolutions. Mark, I want to start off by saying that this is a team, as you look at the standings today, which today being the 28th of December, is either in first place, second place, or third place in their division, depending on how you choose to sort things. And I feel like there is no better way to explain the Dallas Stars this season than a team that could be anywhere between first and third place.
Well, and it's kind of weird, because you can look at the other two teams that are in this dogfight with them, and they all have different stories. Who would have thought that Winnipeg and Rick Bowness would have the Jets up at the top of the division? I mean, this is a team that really got rid of a bunch of their high-end guys. And
the ones they have left may not want to be there.
Yeah. Hey, well, have you been to Winnipeg in winter?
Yeah, right.
But all of a sudden, this is a team that's playing great. So, you know, kudos to them. And then you have Colorado, which, you know, in spite of everything, you have people who think that Colorado should just run away with the division. You have other people who look at Colorado and see that they're playing a bunch of old Dallas Stars down on their fourth line, and they aren't deep enough to go anywhere. But, yeah, they're in the mix.
And mix is a good word for it. Yeah, with Colorado, you can't really run away from somebody if you pull a hamstring every time you start taking steps. So it's but at the same time, right, Dallas is playing with their backup goaltender and well-discussed holes at various points in the roster. So nobody can really pull away. I think Colorado's 5-4-1 in their last 10. Winnipeg is 7-1-2. Dallas is 6-3-1. So it's not going to get any clearer anytime soon, it doesn't seem like. The one thing I will say, and we've kind of harped on this before, it's a fake a fake tie in one sense, because Colorado has played two more games than both Winnipeg and Dallas. So if you're accounting for that, truly Winnipeg and Dallas are tied atop the division with 44 points from 33 games. Colorado is in second with 45 points, but they've played 35 games. So it's a technical tie, which is often the best kind of tie, but really realistically, Dallas and Winnipeg have a little bit of an advantage when you look at how things shake out.
Yeah, although don't look too close at who's in fourth and fifth and how close they are. So
there's
nothing to be comfortable with.
That's a really good segue, because of course Arizona put a pretty phenomenal comeback on Colorado last night. But man, let's start with we've got two games that have happened, Mark, since the last time we podcasted, and I want to start with the Nashville game, because it is, I mean, literally we've never seen anything like the ending of that game before in the history of the NHL.
What? Hold on. What? I thought we lost 2-1 in both games. I turned it off with like 20 seconds left because just nothing was happening.
So we
were just losing 2-1 on the road, and nice try to come back. But, sometimes you got to take the L.
Well, the key, Mark, is that your boy Yanni Hakanpaa's heater continues unabated.
Undoubtedly. This is probably the big story of the year right now, is the heater that Hakanpaa's been on since the start of December. It would be really interesting to do a breakdown of what happened on that play where Hakanpaa scored the game winner, because it is, who was it? I'm old, so my mind goes, but somebody laid a big hit in the middle and then kind of turned around to watch it right as Hakanpaa was coming in to lean on one.
Yeah, and there was that. There may have been Steele who was out there after scoring the. But it was, and you had traffic behind the net. Like you, there, at one point you had, I believe it was three Predators and two Stars between Hakanpaa shooting and the goaltender.
And then the seas parted.
Yeah, it's weird that you get it's weird that you get a goal coming through that kind of traffic that doesn't hit anything, and it really just. Yeah, it didn't even look like a hit. It was a collision. It was a kind of an inadvertent thing. And all of a sudden there's a star on the ground and Predators players going crazy. And it just seemed very clear that Rene didn't see that puck until the very, very last second. And it had enough heat on it to go off the pads and in versus somewhere safer from Nashville's perspective.
Well, and if you look at it really close, I think you can see a Predator kind of deciding not to get in front of a Hakanpaa slapper.
Which fair, I mean, fair point.
Fair, yeah, and so yeah, that it opened up because somebody somewhere decided not to take the damage, and so the damage ended up in the net.
Yeah, and let's even go back because even the play before that was, I thought, pretty both of those goals were pretty chaotic, and you know it really felt like one of those games. Like sometimes Rene just gets you. Right. And it really had the vibe of one of those games where they were going to, you know, kind of bang on the door for a while. You know, Dadonov got it close, but it kind of had that feeling. Well, this is just going to be one of those nights. They're getting goalied. Good luck in St. Louis. But just a couple moments of just pure chaos. And I think this the through line for me, and you brought this up on our last podcast, we were talking about kind of the evolution of the bottom six and you know, Sam Steele and Craig Smith were that entire fourth line felt like it was having a pretty significant impact throughout the game against Nashville.
You know, it's amazing that line has, as the season's progressed, gotten to the point where they will come out usually in the second period and have at least one shift where they just tilt the ice and they don't really threaten to score all that much, but they bring some energy and they bring some puck possession. And it kind of fires up the rest of the team.
Yeah.
And, you know, here Smith got rewarded for you know, being in the right area at the right time. But kind of moving on to St. Louis, didn't you have the same feeling coming down the stretch?
Yeah, and as well. You did. And it's sort of the same. I think it's this particular team, right? I think you could say you both had at the same time. It's sort of like Schrodinger's hockey team. I simultaneously... I mean, they got 40 shots for Pete's sake. So you always feel like they're in it, but you also always feel like they could screw it up? Question mark.
Yeah. Well, but I literally thought Jamie Benn scored. Right there oh, with yeah. 6-on-5. And it's like, this is just what happens. St. Louis turtled a little bit. It's kind of nice to see the turtle on the other team. And Ben just put it in, and it turns out Hofer had just a fabulous game.
Yeah, and that's, I guess the reward of the turtle, right, is if you get one of those, if you get a performance of that caliber from your goaltender, if he can make 40 saves, it's a pretty effective strategy if you can get 40 saves out of your tendy.
You know, if you win, it's a great strategy is kind of what it comes down to, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Except for those of us with weak hearts and then it turns into just majors.
You know, the positive is it wasn't Bennington. That's really the only benefit. The only upside of losing to St. Louis is that it wasn't Bennington.
You know, it's kind of sad that it wasn't Bennington because I don't think Bennington stands on his head.
Yeah, I mean they wouldn't have lost, but that's a very good point. It's interesting to me though. This is I think a really good example. It's sort of a good example of how there is so little difference in today's NHL in a win and a loss, right? Like we could very easily be sitting here talking about two straight losses. We could very easily be sitting here talking about two straight wins. And the difference is, you know, Hofer making a tremendous save to deny Jamie Benn. And the difference is a, you know, Nashville Predator defender deciding to, and even, you know, may not even been, you know, I don't want to get hit with this. It may have just been, I want to make sure my all-star elite all-world goalie has a clear look at a fairly, you know, it's not like Hakanpää was shooting from a particularly threatening area of the ice, right? So it could have been as simple as, that's a long distance shot with the end of the game. I'm going to make sure my guy has a good look. He doesn't really need to worry about the rebound. So I'm going to try and get out of the way. Right. So,
yeah.
But it's just interesting that like two split second plays, you know, going back even further, right. Setting up the game tying goal against Nashville, Jason Robertson is just like, I mean, he's so young, but it's such a veteran, like gets away with not a capital H hook, but one of those lower H hooks that,
It's one of those last 2 minute hooks that you just get away with it because the officials aren't going to call it.
Exactly. And having the presence of mind to know that in a jump, and it may have been an accident. So I'm just going to assume that he did something awesome because he's awesome. But you're exactly correct, right? There's a big schmoz behind the net, loose puck, lots of bodies, guys going back and forth, you know, final minute of a one goal game. Refs aren't going to call anything. You kind of have to, you know, shove your stick down somebody's throat, right? It's gotta be really clear. So you're going to get away with a little bit. And yeah, he got a little tug on, I believe, I forget which one of the defenders it was, but on one of Nashville's defenders, which is sort of how that puck popped free and turned into the scoring chance for Smith. So yeah, a little play there. Then you have a shot block that doesn't quite happen. And then you have a goalie that makes a chest on the ice, phenomenal save.
I think your perspective here is perfect. The difference between those being 2-1 losses and then it being a 1-1, Dallas getting the full 2 out of Nashville, it's such a fine line.
It's Forsberg hitting the post.
Yeah, well, or Hintz hitting the post at the beginning of the third against St. Louis.
Yeah,
I look at this and say, what more good can we say about Scott Wedgwood? Because this is a guy who has stepped in and given the Stars a chance to win. He's truly a number two, if you look at the way the NHL set up. And he's come in and been phenomenal. You know, there was that sequence in the 5-on-3 where it was just chaos all over the place. And he made some intentional saves in that setup that defy belief. One where Lindell is almost has his knee on his back. Lindell makes the save. Wedgwood has just barely gotten his stick back. But then he actually gets up to his feet and makes a save with his glove, you know, from 3-4 feet away.
Yeah, and I think Razor said it on the broadcast. He's a battler, you know, a guy. And I think that's important when you're talking about a backup goalkeeper, because this is a team that, you know, in a perfect world, I think you get sort of that sort of the Ottinger effect, right? That calm certainty in the right spot, makes the right save, you know, kind of very, very workmanlike, just not workmanlike in the sense of not being difficult, workmanlike in the sense of not a lot of scramble. But then I think you go to the other side of the spectrum, and if you have a player that's perhaps not at that same, you know, level of technical talent or technical ability, like you want to see the guy fighting, right? And with Wedgwood, you really get the sense that he's trying to get to every puck. He's trying to make every save. There's no, like, there's no mental slippage, anything like that. And it just, you have to imagine playing in front of a guy like that. You kind of feel, to your point, right? In that particular sequence, it was Lindell. And I think Hakanpää was also, you know, there were two players behind the goalie playing goalie. And there's sort of, you have to think he encourages that kind of commitment, because, you know, you don't want to be the one that looks like he's, you know, dragging ass while your goaltender is doing everything he possibly can, throwing everything he's got to try and stop the puck.
Yeah, and I think the number that they were flashing was that the Stars have played 6 minutes of 5-on-3, given up zero goals, and Hakanpää and Lindell have been on the ice for well over 5.5 minutes each of those 6 minutes.
It's just insane.
Yeah, and you know, as much as you say bad about Hakanpää and Lindell, I think you have to respect that there are certain things that they excel at. And,
yeah,
and working in a situation where it's just, you know, bar the doors and hold on, these guys are pretty successful at it.
I mean, being able to just clear the puck, right? When you yeah, don't have to worry about triggering or I think you're right. And it's the challenge with them. And I would honestly say that it's the same challenge as much as we rain, you know, brimstone down on the guy. It's the same challenge of Ryan Suter. It's not that they are not contributors. It's that they are sometimes asked to do things that they cannot, or, yeah, you know, it's that they're sometimes put in situations that don't suit their skill set, and the result suffers, you know, as an expense of that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think Suter gets a bit of a bad rap just because of the way that he plays. He tends to look nonchalant, and I'm pretty sure that's not true. But you know, when it looks like you're easing into plays, it's pretty easy to criticize regardless of the results, because the eye test just forces the brain to think that this guy's not giving his all.
There's that, and then I also I do think as well, he's had some high profile, like the playoff series against you know, Vegas last year, right? I think it's partially what you're talking about. It's partially that he is sort of getting a contact blame for the fact that Miro doesn't have an ideal partner and is playing on his offside. So Suter is kind of the whipping boy for, well, if it wasn't for him, Miro would be on his correct side. And, you know, he gets a little bit of shade for that. And then you also factor in, like, put it right out there, right? He has made a couple of, like, really high profile errors in recent seasons. And, you know, you could say the same thing about Jamie Benn, but at least when Jamie Benn was going insane and costing his team a playoff series, he also had a, you know, rebound offensive season, right? So there's some give and take there that doesn't necessarily exist with Suter's game, right? When Suter does something well, you don't notice him. When Suter makes a mistake, you're picking the puck out of your net, and that flavors how you view the guy. You just can't, it just changes the way you look at him.
Yeah, and I mean, the same is probably true with Hakanpää as well. Hakanpää couldn't handle some pressure behind the net against St. Louis and ends up coughing up the puck. And then in essence, getting back into the play, he screens off Wedgwood and Neighbors puts one right in a tough spot. So, yeah, Hakanpää gets that. I don't know that there's an ideal player out there. So,
no,
you know, with Hakanpää, you can, you know, take a look. He's a third pair guy. So you got to cut him a little more slack for what he contributes. And Suter, on the other hand, is playing with Miro. He's a step up above Roman Polak doing the same thing, right?
Yeah. Well, and it comes with the, as well, like a lot of the opinion for Suter solidified prior to Thomas Harley's emergence. And so when we were as a kind of media discourse, right, when we were settling into how we think Suter plays, he was still the quarterback of the second power play unit, right? He was still, you know, playing 20 minutes. He was overexposed, right? And that doesn't make the opinion wrong, by the way. Those were things that shouldn't have been happening, and he would be better served with less of a burden in the lineup and a lot of the stuff. But, you know, it's, those are factors into how the team plays him, factors into how we view his play in a way that isn't always fair.
And to tell you the truth, you know, as I write a bunch of previews, so I'm looking at other teams, and If I'm being honest about it, if I take a look at the third pair on any team that we're playing, it's pretty much something that's been, pieced together.
Yeah.
It's remnants, and the Stars' third pair frequently stacks up pretty good against whoever they're playing's third pair. So, again, this is kind of modern hockey and how teams have to be constructed to fall within the right price stripes, range for what you can do on defense.
I mean, we just finished talking about the impact, and I'm even eating a little bit of crow indirectly, right? We talked last podcast about a world in which instead of, one of the depth forwards, they pick up a defenseman, and it might have worked out with a more balanced roster, but at the same time, they certainly needed Craig Smith and Sam Steele last night, the last couple of games, right? Those, they have had a positive effect on that lower six unit. So, who's to say what the good decisions are?
Yeah, and to tell you the truth, I think Steele has the ability to play up the lineup. He's kind of taken that role away from Dellandrea, which has left Dellandrea without a home. Yeah, I mean, he played top line in Minnesota last year.
So, and we saw that in Nashville. The game on the line, we've got, both Smith and Steele were on the ice with Robertson at one point while that game was being decided. So,
and what are your thoughts here? How do you like the forward lines at this point? Are you happy with the status quo?
I'm happy, but I would be tinkering. I certainly think you are, and I had the same argument last time. So I am always a fan of using the regular season to make adjustments and to test adjustments, especially considering Dallas is comfortably in the playoffs, right? They're comfortably in the mix for the top spot. I think we've seen a little bit of slippage with, and it's we're talking about, of course, talking about the fairness of expectations, right? We've seen a little bit of slippage from the top line, despite the fact that they're 1-2-3 in team scoring and all more or less on a point a game pace. But it's funny that they've put themselves in a tier where Jason Robertson being only on a point of game pace is a problem. And then we've seen, it does look like Wyatt Johnston has hit a little bit of a sophomore slump. Some of that's luck based. He hit a post the past couple games as well. Jamie Benn is going through one of his kind of famous, even at his height, he always had those fallow periods that were, followed by, by feasts. So I'm a big proponent of, maybe you leave the Duchesne group alone for a little bit because you need somebody carrying the offense. But I do think that it's time to start mixing and matching pieces. You can't make quite the same case for the Ben and the Hintz units that it's no longer an insane thing to suggest that maybe we should be looking at different line combinations with those six players to see if they could eke out a little bit more. I'm disinclined to, yes, I think Steele can play up the lineup. He's shown a little bit of that flash. I'm disinclined to say that he should on a full-time basis. I think it's more of a spot start thing. I like the way the bottom, that fourth line is going, and I like the type of game they play. Steele in particular, Steele seems to, we talked about how, Radek Fox and Castillo's insane take that he should be a defenseman. But we've talked a little bit about how Foxa has become even more limited offensively while still retaining his defensive value. So to me, having a player like Steele that can play alongside him maybe mitigates that a little bit, right? You still have a little bit of skill with a guy that's going to lock things down and makes that unit more functional. So I think for me, I'm largely satisfied, but I would maybe be looking at the Ben unit and the Hintz unit and seeing, are there any pieces to mix and match? Are there any things to do? Maybe giving, Marchment the occasional double shift or Sagan or we've seen some success with Sagan before, or even Duchesne, right? Not breaking up that second unit, but getting some different looks either to
down on that. Who do you change?
I mean,
who do you change, and maybe more importantly, why?
Yeah. The why I think is the most important. The why you make a change is because at some point you might need to, right? At some point, either the Duchesne line is going to go cold. At some point, somebody gets hurt. We saw it in the playoffs last year, right? Pavelski goes down. You need to know what you can do. And I think that you have the advantages, the Stars right now. You are not fighting for your playoff life, so you can afford to make a couple of mistakes. So as far as the why is concerned, I think that you could get more out of the top line. I think that you have slumping players on the third line. And I think that you have a long-term need to see what kind of options and variety you can introduce into your scoring lines. So I right. think why you'd make the change, that's what I'd say.
Well, I was actually saying why. It's like, tell me your change and then why that's the change.
Oh, well, so I think one thing I would try in limited bits is we saw last year that Tyler Seguin had success stepping into Joe Pavelski's spot with Hintz and with Robertson. And so I think that you try that because that's a familiar combination that has produced in the past. Seguin is having a good season, right? He's at 23 points, 33 games, right? He is profiling right now like a guy who could skate with Robertson and Hintz and produce. And by doing that, I think you free up Duchesne, who is a little bit more dynamic. And maybe that is something, maybe Duchesne could help with Johnston and Ben and give them an interesting look, right? And you could find a way to leverage, you know, you could basically, you would increase or maintain the production of Hintz's line by sliding Seguin onto it, while simultaneously increasing the, you know, fixing some of what we're seeing with the, you know, the Ben Johnston pairing, and then with Pavelski, kind of with what's left, like, you know, Pavelski, Marchment, you know, Dadanoff, right? That group, Sam Steele potentially playing up the lineup. You could there is a chance that you would gain more by sort of resuscitating Ben and Johnston than you would lose by going away from that, you know, second unit that we've seen.
Yeah. I think your idea this
wouldn't be a full-time thing, right? You'd still go back to the Duchesne, Seguin, Marchment group for the most part. This is more about, you know, giving somebody a jolt. And again, about knowing that if something bad happens, all of a sudden, it's not an, oh no, what do we do moment. It's an, okay, well, plan B, you go here, you do this, right? It gives you a better sense of how you can distribute your players.
Yeah. And I think using Seguin as a guy who has a home on a line, but can do shifts with other players, I think is pretty good right now. I think Seguin is a pretty high end Swiss Army knife at this point of his career. And yeah, he meshes well with other guys. I think
that's a great way to describe him. Seguin, he is no longer a player that can carry his own line, in my opinion. But if you put him with two skilled forwards, he can make that line much better. Like he's an amplifier, right? He's going to make every line he's on better, but better is dependent on how good the players he's playing with. So I have no doubt that if you put him between, you know, if you put him with Foxa and with Delandria, Foxa and Delandria are going to get higher quality looks by virtue of playing with Tyler Seguin. They just may not be able to do anything about it. But if you put Seguin on a line with players that can think at a high level, finish at a high level, play offense at a high level, then he will be able to facilitate.
I'll throw mine out there. I would start by swapping Dadanov and Pavelski. Mm. And I'll tell you why. First off, I think the thing that's missing on that top line is I think Pavelski's actually lost a step. And one of the things that kills that line is that they don't have anybody who can effectively, you know, get on the forecheck early. If they can get a bobble or something like that, you see the return of this game where they can get on a cycle and they're all really good at getting the puck off the board. And so they can be effective, but they don't get there nearly as much this year as they did last year. And I think it's because they're quite a bit slower. I would move Dadanov up in that role because he is probably the most effective F1 that we have on this team. And he also has the creativity and the scoring ability to hang with those guys. I think it unlocks Robertson. I think it unlocks Hintz, especially. Hintz, I think, is just law. His speed is not used because of the lack of speed from the rest of the guys on the unit. And then alternatively, I'd say Pavelski with Wyatt Johnston. I mean, how can you not want to have the household together?
Right. I mean, they're roommates, right?
Exactly. And you throw in Ben, who can be effective with both of them. I think that works. And then you kind of double shift Seguin periodically to take some Dadanov minutes away.
Are you concerned about foot speed when all of a sudden you've got Jamie Benn and Joe Pavelski on the same line?
Well, I mean, I'm concerned about foot speed the same way with Hintz. So yeah, I'm a little more concerned, but on the other
to me, the risk is, and I don't disagree with your thinking, by the way, this is just me being a spoil sport, but to me, the risk is that is all asking an awful lot of Wyatt Johnston.
I think Johnston, the more responsibility you give him, the better he's going to be.
Yeah, I don't hate that. I don't hate that at all. I think that's it.
I mean, alternatively, you can.
Yeah. If Sagan moves up, then who goes down with Mason and Duchesne?
I think you just double shift Sagan periodically, and maybe Duchesne. You can roll them in so that, you know, Dodonov, you probably want to keep at 13, 14 minutes a game.
Yeah.
And so if you double shift either Duchesne or Sagan up into that top line, I think you can adjust the minutes so that it works.
I tell you, the one that I'm curious about is, and you'd have to have the right finisher, and it might be Pavelski, it might be Robertson. I'm interested in what you might be able to accomplish with Hintz and Duchesne. it feels like one of those things where they either complement each other and are able to play at a speed that just most, you know, put them with a finisher and they can move the puck and the play at a pace that a lot of teams can't keep up with. Or I could see it being a car crash disaster because they're both moving so fast that nobody really has a chance to settle and react to anything.
Yeah, but put Jason Robertson out there at the same. His brain slows the game down. So
I mean, that's kind of my thinking, yeah. Right? Is you have Hintz and Duchesne capable of progressing the puck, and then, you know, Robertson is we talked about the goal against Nashville. He's a big strong boy, and he knows where he knows the spots, and he knows how to shoot, and he's an effective passer as well. I mean, he leads the team in assists. So I think that Robertson could be a fantastic facilitator between those two. I'm a little bit more concerned with the rest of the lineup if you put kind of the two speed guys together, but I'm very interested in that trio in a vacuum.
Yeah. And of course, anybody who follows other unnamed Dallas Stars writers would argue, what about Bork and Stankoven, right?
I mean, they exist.
And so this is something that at some point will bear fruit. And so at that point, some of this, we're moving deck chairs around on the Titanic, and there's a rescue on the horizon, and they're tearing up the AHL right now.
Yeah, the challenge there is the same as last week, and then we'll take a brief break before resolutions. I think that's a good segue. The unfortunate thing is everybody is playing well in the forward core right now, so it's really it remains difficult to see who you'd pull, and you know the same. You know, it remains difficult to see who you'd pull, who gets the hook to get Bork into the lineup. Because for a while it would have been Dadonov, but hey, guess what? All of a sudden he's scoring for fun.
But it still may be. I mean, that's the great thing about DeBoer's system and rolling all four lines. And to tell you the truth, there's a lot of talk about, at least in the past, there's been talk. You don't want to bring your high end prospect talent up and then bury him on the third line or the fourth line. And I'm looking at this. I think Stankoven and Bork would be awesome on the fourth line.
Yeah. I mean, well, and the reason you say that is you don't want to put them with players that can't play, right? You don't want to put them with players that don't have skill. And right now with the Stars,
skill.
Right now the risk of calling up a guy and playing him on the third line is mitigated by the fact that, oh no, we're going to play him with Jamie Benn and Wyatt Johnston. How will he ever acclimate to the NHL?
or even Sam Steele or Craig Smith. Yeah, that's not going to work, is it?
It's different when it's, welcome to the NHL. Here are your line mates, Radek Foxa and whoever else, right? Go score some goals for us, please.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're playing with Curtis McKenzie down in Cedar Park, and McKenzie is, the assist numbers for McKenzie are going to be out of this world for this season because he's playing with those two guys.
We're going to take a quick break on that note, then we're going to come back with some concluding thoughts and some seasonal appropriate fun. So we'll be back in just 1 second. Yeah.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so we've spoken, Mark, specifically about the last couple games, next couple games, some of what's going on. Let's get a little bit general, and in honor of the approaching holiday, let's do a couple of resolutions, right? So you can be one of the players, you can be manager, whoever, whatever angle you want to take here. But what is something that you are kind of, what's a declaration, a resolution you're going to make for the coming year?
My resolution is easy. It's one I've been pushing for a while here. My resolution as Jim Nill is to bring in a talented defender to play with Miro Heiskanen at the trade deadline. And that's the guy who we're going to roll through with and get the Stanley Cup with.
I love it. Easy. I think mine, and I co-sign yours, had you not said it, I would have. I think mine is, and this is weird because I've been preaching patience for the last couple months on this podcast, but my resolution would be finding a hole in the lineup for either Stankoven or Bork. And at this point, both would be ideal, sure. But as far as like a must-do resolution, I think that down the stretch, one of those guys at least needs to be a full-time Dallas star, because I think that's going to unlock a layer of potential on this offense that just is we think that they're good now, right? Wait and see.
I like it. Now I have, before we get too far here, I have some questions for you. I'm going to test your current hockey knowledge.
Oh no. Let's do it.
Patrick Kane.
Oh, Patrick Kane.
How many goals does he have?
I know that it's at least two, because he got some a tire and an OT. I'm going to say he's got four goals.
Six. Point a game guy. 11 games, six goals, five assists. Only a minus two. Only. Is this somebody Dallas could have used?
No, because his and honestly, like, his performance is irrelevant to my no, because there are players that are giving you what he's giving Detroit right now already on the Stars or in the Stars organization is one.
Oh, and so, then so two, here's my follow-on question before you get to number two. How many point per game guys did the Dallas Stars have right now?
Oh gosh, it's at least three, if not four. I know that Robertson, Pavelski, and Hintz are all within a point of it. I want to say Sagan is at 23, so he's a bit under. Duchesne is close. I'll go with five.
I'll go with zero.
Well, I mean, 32 32 points in 33 games is that's that you're sounds, basically that sounds there.
Okay, rounding eight. If we're going rounding, then we'll say one.
Okay, but that's fair. You're right. But if you think an 11 game sample size from Detroit is representative, I just, the way that I look at it is Dallas doesn't need, also Patrick Kane, I've got a stat. So his shooting percentage is 26%.
You don't like that? That's not sustainable.
check back with me in a month. But even if we look at, 8 points in five games and say, you know what, that's just who Kane's going to be down the stretch, I would still contend that let's even look him up on cap frame. Let's see how much he's paying. Dallas needs the money elsewhere, and they don't need the offense, is basically how that boils down. His cap hit is $2.75 million. So one, Dallas couldn't afford him. Who do you take off the roster to accommodate 35-year-old Patrick Kane? And why wouldn't you make that same deal to get a defender that could help you, I guess, is my ultimate, no on Kane argument.
Well, if you score enough goals, you don't need to defend, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. That's kind of how Dallas has gotten to where they are.
Anyway, I just throw that out there because it's, for all the naysayers out there, Patrick Kane probably deserves a little bit of a shout out there for, you know, coming into a Detroit team and putting up a bunch of points and then putting them on a losing streak at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the ideal, right? That's yep. Detroit could not have drawn it up more perfectly. Drive your own trade value up, drive our draft position, you know, drive our draft position up, and we'll all be happy.
Yep, love it. Ready for one more trivia?
Yeah, we got time for one
well,
more.
Well, Chicago is coming into town. So we kind of know that we're going to see a bunch of Connor Bedard and Bedard and Haskin on the ice at the same time. It's probably going to be really fun to watch. But this is more of a nuts and bolts question. Who's number two in goals on the Chicago Blackhawks?
Ooh, is it DeBrincat?
Oh, DeBrincat's not even with Chicago anymore.
I thought there was another one that came back.
It's Chicago.
Aren't there multiple? There are multiple DeBrincats, right?
No, he's tiny. There's like 3/4 of a DeBrincat.
I strongly disagree. There's got to be a DeBrincat on that team. He's in witness protection. No, the answer
there is a DeBrincat. There is a DeBrincat, and he's our favorite take it to the face, Jason.
Oh, is it Jason Dickinson?
Yes, 11 goals.
Jason Dickinson has 11 goals.
Yep.
Wow.
What is that? That would be second on the Stars in scoring?
Yeah.
Goals?
27 nope. penalty minutes, 16 points. What's his shooting percentage? I'm sure it's great.
I don't know. And all I can say
he's shooting 22%.
Yep. That's just, again, sustainable.
No, it's totally fine, especially he's doubling his career average. So he's fine. Everything's fine. It is totally normal for, you know, what is it, 28-year-old depth forwards to double their shooting percentage and just keep that up for the rest of their career.
Well, but I guess my point being is that, you know, years and years ago, Jason Dickinson was told that he was never going to be an NHL player. And I guess he's proved him wrong.
He did. And I have a fond affection for Jason Dickinson.
Yeah. Whose face is going to take that much abuse and still come out smiling?
In the words of our dear leader, he has a face.
It must be hit by all sorts of objects.
He's got a face.
Yep. And he has 11 goals. So
good for him.
Yep. So what do you think about Chicago?
Doesn't get any more the next couple games and then goes right back to scoring a ton after that.
Yep. Yep. Okay, anything else?
That's all
about our Miro Haskinen.
Yo, Miro. All right, so again, thank you, KT, for doing all the hard work, Mark, for your insights. Please remember, listen, download, like, do all of the things. And by the next time we talk, it'll be the new year, and we'll have hopefully some good news to share about the Stars' ascent to the standings. We'll try and get an update on Jake Oettinger's status and just react to whatever the heck the crew is doing on the ice ahead of us.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.